Hey neighbors, it's Jessica, and you're listening to another episode of Love Thy Neighbor. This is my 25th episode. I think that's what it is. It's my 25th guest, and I'm so grateful and so humble for all of the awesome people that have come forward in this season. This is the last episode of the season. I am about to actually give birth pretty soon here, and so I was just going to take a little break, but hopefully I'll be back at it soon. And I am so excited for you to meet Mubarak Malik. He's awesome. He is a warrior. And I'm so excited whenever I get to speak to warriors that are defending people who can't always defend themselves. And so I hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as I enjoyed listening to it. Thanks.
Hey, neighbors. This is Jessica, and you are listening to another episode of Love Thy Neighbor. Tonight, I'm speaking to Mubarak Malik, and I'm very, very excited to have him on my podcast episode. And I'm especially excited just because this is the first episode that I'm doing where I'm talking to a lawyer, and I feel like I'm kind of ignorant going into immigration law, and so I'm really excited for him to educate us. And so welcome to the podcast.
Hello, Jessica. Hello, neighbors. Thank you very much. I appreciate you all having me. My name is Mubarak Malik. I go by the Immigration Advocate. I'm a licensed attorney in Illinois and California, and I'm excited to speak with you all today.
What was your upbringing like living here in America, especially as a man of color?
Oh, absolutely. Well, let me tell you a bit about myself. I'm a second-generation Pakistani-American. My grandparents moved from Pakistan to Chicago in about the late 50s, early 60s. And my mother was born here, so I'm her child, obviously. But it's been very interesting to be a man of color in America. I think it's challenging for anybody to be anywhere in the world. But in America, we have a lot of different diversity, and that brings a lot of different issues to the forefront. Because in other countries, some countries are very solidified with just one type of culture and race, where you don't deal with the issues of diversity. But here in America, we have a lot of diverse backgrounds and interests and value systems and so forth. So it's often challenging to navigate, but that's why it's so important for us to learn about the differences between each other. Now, as for me, I could tell you personally that I've had many challenging experiences being a brown male, but I've learned to embrace them and take the power from a suppressor and kind of just launch myself out there to help other people of similar backgrounds and of different backgrounds.
Yes, and that's why your voice and any person of color's voice is so valuable today, especially here in America, because I think it shows the fact that we can all coexist, and not just simply coexist, but actually thrive together. But it really does take a lot of effort and a lot of planning. But in the end, it's very rewarding.
Absolutely. America's a melting pot, and I'm very blessed to live here. And I think we would all agree that we're blessed to be a part of America, whether we were born here or we moved here. So it's a wonderful experience for us all. We're a cutting-edge country, and there's just so many opportunities for us all to live a wonderful life and pursue the American dream.
You were mentioning to me earlier that when 9/11 happened, that you were a freshman in high school and that there were some experiences that you had because of that. Would you mind sharing some of those experiences that you had, or what it was like for you to process what 9/11 was, especially when people were projecting like fears that they had onto you, which were totally undeserved?
Oh, sure. I'd love to spend a few minutes discussing it. It's actually been a long time since I've thought about it or even discussed it. But preparing for this interview, it was something that I had talked to you about. I'd love to share it with our audience here today. So I was just a freshman. I'm 14 years old. It's only about 2-3 weeks into the semester at school. I was sent to a private Catholic school, and it was a totally different experience for me. We had to wear dress shirts and ties to school. So, and it was an all-boys school. So we were there. I remember I was sitting in my religion class, and all of a sudden the principal came over the loudspeakers and made the very unfortunate announcement. And we turned on the TV, and we witnessed it happening as it was going on, and it was just so tragic. Like, a professor was crying all of us were just so confused and distraught. We were all deeply moved. But the thing was, as the news kept coming out and more information was disseminated, it turned out that these attacks were by some Middle Eastern people. And I was Pakistani, and unfortunately at the school I was at, I was one of maybe five people at most throughout all the grades that was of this type of background. As I mentioned, I'm Pakistani. And the actual terrorists were not Pakistani, but regardless of that, I was casted upon those fears and the type of hate that people had towards the terrorist attacks. So unfortunately, it was very difficult. I was bullied and teased, and I dealt with it. I've always been very strong, and I didn't mind, but it was very challenging at the time. And actually, I would say that it probably was a very challenging year for me. I know that I had some other friends and family members who went to other schools, and they witnessed other people of Middle Eastern backgrounds that were attacked and beaten. Thankfully, none of that had ever occurred to me, so I was very blessed. But 9/11 was a very challenging time period. Luckily, it's been 19 years since that's occurred, so a lot of the fears and the hatred is not as prevalent. It's not as evident, I would say. I don't feel like I feel those type of attacks and type of hatred towards me anymore. But it was still a very challenging time period. Being a man of color in America is challenging, especially when you're Pakistani. And in America, there's not a lot of Pakistanis. So when you're Hispanic, there's a lot of different Hispanic groups that are in the country, and you can share the same struggles together oftentimes. But when it comes to Middle Eastern people and Desi people like Indians and Pakistanis, there's not many of us. And so we don't often get to get together and help each other. So for me, it was a very isolated feeling. I just felt like I wasn't to be blamed and I had nothing to do with it, but yet I was suffering for it. But you know what? That's okay. And it's something that we all learn from and grow through. And I'm very blessed to be able to say that I made it through those instances. And in the years since, I haven't dealt with it. And that's a very good thing.
Yes, I'm glad that you haven't had to deal with as much as that now. But I'm sorry for what you did go through in the beginning. Something that I do think is interesting is how when you were talking about the Latinx community, it seems like as different as, you know, cultures are throughout Latin and South America, there are some things that seem very similar. But then when people start throwing around the word like Asian American, that's just such a huge, broad label for like so many different people from different backgrounds, because you're from, like, your family's from Pakistan, but which is very different from Afghanistan culture, from Saudi Arabia culture, from Yemen culture. And it's just, so do you think that a lot of that, like a lot of our misconceptions are just because we aren't educated in the differences between the different types of Asian cultures?
Well, yeah, it's basically, you know, a lack of knowledge. If a lot of people don't know about it, then the information is not being shared as readily. I mean, when I was growing up, I assumed I was Middle Eastern too, but when I was filling out forms, I was writing Asian Pacific Islander. I really didn't have a spot to fill out the forms growing up on the test and so forth. But over the years, I was actually taught that I was Southeast Asian, that Pakistan was a part of India at one time, and the country went through a civil war and broke apart, and Pakistani and Indians are actually Southeast Asian. So I'm actually considered Southeast Asian. So in that sense, it's odd, because then I'm even isolated from being Middle Eastern. So it's an interesting dynamic, but I still appreciate being from my background and having the belief system that I had. Luckily, I was raised by my grandparents and my mother, and they taught me a very strong core system of giving to others, being as kind as possible, always giving a helping hand, and just being like a wonderful type of person. So that's why 9/11 was so surprising for me, because my entire life I was taught to be a Muslim American and that it was all about love and harmony. And I had never heard of any of the terrorist side of Islam or any of the extremist views. So when 9/11 happened and we found out about the terrorism and so forth, it was just as shocking for me as it was, I think, to the rest of America.
And as you, so then when you kept growing up, You went through high school. What was it that made you become interested in eventually getting involved with? So as you continued to grow up, what started interesting you when you went to college? And then maybe what was it that interested you in becoming an immigration lawyer?
You know what, to be honest, as a child, I always thought I'd either be an actor or a lawyer. And while I was in law school, I kind of realized that lawyers are actors when you think about trial advocacy. Because when you're presenting your case, you're presenting evidence, you're trying to convince the jury that your case should be viewed favorably towards your client and so forth. You basically have a script and you're going through the motions. So to me, it was kind of full circle. I ended up being a lawyer. But when I started off in college, I told myself, oh, I want to be a lawyer. And people would tell me, don't say I want to be a lawyer. Say, I'm going to be a lawyer. I'm going to be a lawyer. And so I started just saying, I'm going to be a lawyer. And I felt uncomfortable saying it because it seemed like such a gigantic goal and something that was just out of reach. I had never known a lawyer until that point. So I just started saying, I'm going to be a lawyer. I'm going to be a lawyer. And I just stuck to that dream and just kept plotting and pushing away at it every semester. I went to a community college like most people in my neighborhood. And I did well. I did well enough. And I got to join the scholars program. I graduated from the scholars program. I actually received two associate's degrees. I moved on to get my bachelor's degree with a scholarship. And then from there, I went to the John Marshall Law School. When I graduated the John Marshall Law School, I took the bar exam in Illinois, and I was a licensed attorney. And I returned to the John Marshall Law School and got a master's in law, an LLM, in employee benefits law. And I honestly thought I was going to go into the area of retirement law. It was something that I thought was interesting. It was something that I felt there was a lot of potential in. And I moved across the country from Chicago to California here in San Diego, and I just started putting all my experiences together and so forth and realizing how close we were to the border and how important it would be if I could help fight for the injustices that were going on so close to me, especially coming from an immigrant background and having so many friends that were immigrants and parents that were immigrants. I just knew, hey, you know what? Why don't I do what feels good in my heart, something I love every single day, knowing I make a difference on people's lives? It goes back to how my grandparents and my mother were teaching me my value system about being good upon others and really having a caring and nurturing type of heart. And so immigration law to me just felt like the exact right fit. Just a culmination of all my experiences coming together and going, aha, light bulb moment. I should practice immigration law. And since then, I've just gone full force into immigration. I've been helping out clients with all types of backgrounds, whether it's a fiance coming into the country or coming here, bringing in somebody's parents or bringing in their child. There's just been so many different instances, so many different variations of clients. No two clients seem to be in the same situation. Everyone's a bit different. So it's very interesting. It keeps me on my toes. As you see in the news, immigration is always a hot topic. So it keeps me interested. There's always development. It's a wonderful community. I love reaching out to other lawyers, other undocumented supporters, other just as a support groups in general when it comes to immigration. So to be honest with you, immigration kind of just was probably in my heart and in my mind somewhere and kind of just grew over time. And I realized that's what I want to do.
That's awesome. And then, because you were speaking a little bit to me about how when immigration is covered in the news, there's kind of this like one way of looking at it. Do you wish, are there some things that you wish an average American citizen knew about immigration law?
Well, immigration is a very touchy subject in the eyes of the general public. It's because it's been highlighted in certain ways, as we discussed. So many people believe that immigration law is just about helping people migrate to America, and they have this deep-seated fear that immigrants are going to take their jobs. However, immigration law is a very large area, and I wish people could understand that. I help clients migrate here to live lives with their families or to help businesses come to America and expand their enterprises. I also help American businesses bring in foreign workers to help their ventures grow, whether it's temporary workers, seasonal workers, and so forth. Today, much of the immigration is only seen as heard on TV and in the news, and oftentimes there's a great sensationalization added to that viewpoint in the discourse of the topic. So regardless of who the president is at any given time, there's always challenges when it comes to creating, implementing immigration policies, and I understand that. But we always want to protect our country from foreign attacks. So The sensationalization is understandable in that aspect, but also I just wish people knew that we all came here. We didn't start off in America other than Native Americans and the Mexicans in the southern states and so forth. So we're all basically immigrants. So if we kind of would just change our viewpoint and understanding of how these things work or why they exist, I feel that there'd be much more love and nurturing and a helping hand being extended around every corner from many neighbors all around us.
I love that. And actually, something that was really interesting for me this past weekend is I went to a lecture series, and the person that was talking was saying how a lot of people, when it comes to their, like, that they define their identities after their jobs and the skills they have. And it really started clicking in my head that so much of the rhetoric against immigrants has been, like you said, that, oh no, immigrants are going to come and take our jobs. And it really hit me that the reason why that tool is so effective, unfortunately, but so effective, is because it makes people afraid that they're going to lose their identity, because that's what it comes down to. And
absolutely. I mean, think about it. Most people stay with their jobs and their career tracks and are oftentimes, I'll say this, oftentimes afraid to make a change because we're all rooted into having a job because we need to provide for ourselves and our families. We have mortgages. We have rent. We have to put food in our mouths. There's supplies that we need for our homes and so forth. So we don't want to lose our jobs. It's very important to us. And there's so much stress that comes with being unemployed or needing assistance and so forth. So it's just so challenging. So that's why it's easy to appeal to the minds of the masses that people are going to come take our jobs. Well, are they really going to take our jobs? Do we have the type of job that somebody else could just walk in and take? Or do we have the type of job that we have been working hard at and very experienced at? Or we spent a lot of time in school developing our knowledge base for it? So I think that it's easy to spread the notion of losing our jobs. But if you take a step back and realize why, it's because we're all afraid of suffering from being poor and end up homeless. So it's easy to spread that type of message. And I think that that's why people are scared of it.
I mean, maybe you could share your thoughts about this, but sometimes I just wish it was so much easier to become a citizen, like that it wasn't as expensive, it didn't take as much time. I understand the value, like you were saying, in being able to protect the country and to be able to still make the country have some form of an allure, but I just don't think that it should be this hard for so many people who, like, quite frankly, how there are so many people living here already providing so much, like, why don't we just make it so much easier for them to become citizens?
Honestly, it's a very challenging process to become a citizen here. There's a lot of hurdles to leap over, and that's why it's nice to have a lawyer help you. As for our law office, I try to make sure that we help our clients as much as possible in an affordable cost measure. So I usually will feel out our clients and determine how much income they make, what their circumstances are, how many people are they supporting. And then I try to charge them something moderately affordable. I honestly don't feel like I've ever overcharged anybody. And I mean that from a genuine place. I constantly am thinking about how it'll affect people because I understand the reality of how hard it is to save $500 or how hard it is to save $1,000. So where it might seem not that expensive to somebody who's a little better off, or somebody who's hoity-toity, as you would say, or something. But
yeah.
The truth is, money is hard to get and it's hard to hold on to. So I understand that $500 is a lot to some people. So I try not to charge people a lot of money. And I do understand that there's many different ways to earn your money. But listen, if you're coming from another country and your power of your dollar doesn't go as far as our dollar, then if I charged you X amount of dollars here, that might be very expensive to you in your country. So it's all about trying to find a way to help them without hurting them. And as we all know, immigration policies are constantly changing and everything is discretionary. There's no guarantee when it comes to immigration. So it's a very challenging process and there are many hurdles, but I wish that it was easier for people to come into the country. If it was up to me, we'd let more people in, but it's not up to me. But I do think that there's many good attorneys out there, a lot of other support groups and a lot of different organizations trying our best to make it possible for people to come to this country and help them get on their feet and so forth.
Exactly. And maybe you could touch a little bit more on this, but how have you and your firm been able to help individuals receive green cards and full citizenship, other than what you just talked about, how you try and make the process affordable for those that can't necessarily afford it as easily?
Absolutely. Well, I'm the principal attorney at the law office. I created it. It's the Law Office of Mubarak Malik. I go by the Immigration Advocate. And I've assembled a law office with staff that's passionate about immigration law. And my staff brings years of experience to the table. We've been able to help many individuals obtain their immigration through our dedication to staying abreast to the changes in the law and by networking with other attorneys on matters that they're experts in. Immigration is an area, like I said, that's very challenging, but it's also straightforward because the government lets us know what's needed to apply for immigration. So as an attorney, I follow the guidelines provided by the government and compile and present my clients in the most practical and diligent methods available. We're able to therefore help clients of all backgrounds. Most clients are individually seated, so they all are in different situations. So we try our best to understand where they're coming from, ask them all the right questions, stay abreast of the changes in the laws, follow the court cases that are making differences, and then discuss it with our peers and see what we come up with. There's a lot of unresolved issues out there, so it's constantly a battlefield, and we're trying to navigate it the best we can.
I was wondering if you could touch on a little bit more about how you wish people from the Middle East, but also like South Asian communities, were portrayed more in the media, in politics. How do you wish that people were portrayed more?
Well, I do think that Hollywood's doing a better job at portraying people of color. I love going to the movies, one of my favorite pastimes to relax my mind. So throughout 2019, I really noticed myself that there was a lot more Asian people in the movies, African-American people, and people of mixed ethnicities. One of my favorite films of the year was this movie Yesterday. It was about the Beatles, except it was a world where the Beatles ceased to exist. I don't know if you've heard about this movie.
Yes.
Oh, it was a delight. I enjoyed it so much. There's a character named Jack Malik, so we shared the same last name. That made me feel really good to see somebody else with my name and similar complexion on the screen. And I really enjoyed it. It was magical. It's just a really feel-good type of movie. As far as categorizing us, I feel that the term Middle Eastern is kind of misunderstood, like we discussed earlier today. I mean, Middle Eastern countries are only certain countries. And Pakistan and India are not actually considered Middle Eastern countries. They're Southeast Asian countries. So I think as a whole, the country's coming around and changing. I like watching this television show called The Good Place, and there's a lady on that show of a similar background. So I feel that there's a lot of changes coming and that people are being more inclusive and that we're starting to see more exposure to different races, including Middle Eastern, Southeast Asian, Asian, and the like. So I think we're doing a good job. We're moving forward. I can really feel a harmony out there. I don't think that we're as separate and segregated as the news paints us out to be. I mean, if I go outside my house and look at my neighbors, and I'm sure the neighbors on our listeners here would agree, we're all of different backgrounds. I have neighbors of all different backgrounds, cultures, ethnicities, and I try to get to know them more and more. I mean, I'm from Chicago, so I grew up with a lot of Hispanic influences around me, a lot of African-Americans and white people, not so many Asian people per se, in my opinion. But here in San Diego, I've been blessed to be able to meet so many different Asian people that I've learned so much so far. I've met so many new Korean friends, Vietnamese friends, Tao friends, Lao friends, and so forth. I just feel like Pacific Islanders, I'm just growing here and getting to meet so many other people. And that's just a great example of how we're really not that separate. It's the news that kind of paints it that way.
Exactly. And I liked what you said earlier about when you were talking about Jack Malik from Yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Just how even just that one connection that you had where you two shared the last name, the same last name, I don't think that a lot of we white people really understand like what a moment like that means to minorities in America, just because for us white people, like, we've been represented for years and years and years in the media. The interesting thing, too, is that white people, there have been so many years worth of content where white people have been portrayed as like the heroes, the villains, the complicated mm-hmm. characters, and oftentimes the minorities are kind of typecast into very specific roles. So that's why I think a movie like Yesterday was powerful, because you saw a man of color who became successful, the world loved him, he got this nice girl, and it was empowering, because it was like, oh, like maybe 20 years ago, maybe he would have been typecasted as, you know, some stereotype, you know, and I think stuff like that is really interesting, how now we're starting to dive into the complexities of different minorities.
And I think they do that as well. I mean, think about it. The Beatles are four Caucasian guys, and they cast this Middle Eastern or Southeast Asian man, character Jack Malik, to play the guy who became the Beatles and sang their songs and so forth. So it shows you that they're aware of that too. And I think it was a really cool moment for the world. I mean, it was based in the UK, so they might be kind of used to that more so, but as an American watching the movie, I thought it was fantastic. A great representation, and I'm just glad to see that things are coming forward and moving full circle. But as you were speaking on, the world is designed in a white man's vision. So the definition of beauty for years, for decades, has been defined by what a white male, a white straight male, would find to be attractive. So more and more things are changing and becoming more inclusive and more included of other people and their different styles of interest and their passions. So I think that we're seeing a growth. I think we're seeing our cultures moving forward. And I think it's being reflected in the arts.
Yes. And I think oftentimes the arts are really where there's so much power to change. And I know that a lot of people, you know, don't like hearing actors or actresses get, quote, political, but I mean, if you think about it, so much of our life is spent watching TV or listening to music. And, you know, like sometimes I think it's important that we listen to these people that are, you know, creating these characters for us.
I was just watching the Oscars recently, and I thought it was great to see both the best actor for a male and best actor for a female both basically touch on immigration issues, whether people are aware of it or not. Renee Zellweger thanks her immigrant parents. And Joaquin Phoenix is actually, his real name was Joaquin Rafael Bottom. And they're from Venezuela. And they eventually came to America as well. So both of the winners are immigrants in a sense. So I think that we're seeing a lot more inclusion. And we're just seeing the celebration of success of what can come from pursuing the American dream.
Exactly. Now, as a final question, I was wondering if you had any advice for someone, for any of our neighbors, on how they could love their neighbors of color better and more effectively.
Listen, I don't want the neighbors that are not of color to feel that they're excluded. To be honest, I think that we all love each other, and we love having more white people in our lives. I learned when I was younger that I used to like to say, point out the differences between how white culture was versus other cultures. But as I got more educated, I stopped doing that because I started to realize that it was more enjoyable to learn about the differences between us. So I would suggest mm-hmm. taking the time to meet your neighbors and say hello. Take out time to learn who they are and what their ethnicities are. Ask so that you could take out time to research more about their cultures on your own so you can become more understanding of their value systems. I think this is the same approach that we should really use towards any group or any type of different background of culture or, you know, any type of value system. And to be honest, I think we should just try to accept each other for who we are and come together as a nation and as a community to support, love, and respect our neighbor.
And that's a wrap on season one. Thank you so, so much for listening to all these awesome episodes. And I hope that as you've gone through this journey with me and with these awesome guests, that you've been able to awaken your mind to the fact that racism is still real. If you are a white person listening to this, I hope that you've been able to walk away feeling encouraged that you can remove racism in your life and that you can accept more tolerance and that you can be more loving of your neighbors. But also if you identify as a person of color, I hope that these stories have been inspiring for you and have given you some role models to listen to and to be inspired from. And I'm so excited to start season 2 eventually here soon. Take care.